Coming up on KUCB News, the legislature approves using permanent fund draws to finance state government, and meth usage is rising in Alaska. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Zoe Sobel with some local news on Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. For the first time in Alaska Permanent Fund's 40-year history, the legislature has adopted a plan to draw money from the fund to pay for state government. Governor Bill Walker says he'll sign the bill. Supporters say it protects the fund. But as Alaska Public Media's Andrew Kitchenman reports, opponents are concerned about the pressure it could place on permanent fund dividends.
There's been a lot of uncertainty over the $65 billion permanent fund's future. But Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster says Senate Bill 26 removes that uncertainty. Both legislative chambers passed it Tuesday.
The Permanent Fund Corporation has been asking for stability and predictability so that they can plan how they invest. SB 26 allows that to happen.
Alaska state government is spending about $2.5 billion more than it's bringing in taxes, fees, and oil royalties. And the piggy bank it's used to cover past deficits, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, is almost empty. The bill draws roughly 5% of the fund's market value.
SB 26 does not specify how these funds are to be split. That will be left to future legislatures to determine.
In the Senate, Eagle River Republican Anna McKinnon says limiting the draw prevents the legislature from spending down fund earnings so that dividends disappear.
The bill before us guarantees Alaska's dividends into the future for my children and my grandchildren.
But the effect on PFDs concerns some bill opponents. They're split between Republicans who want deep cuts to state government services and Democrats who want some combination of higher oil and gas taxes and an income tax to shore up the budget. Juneau Democratic Representative Sam Cueto III says the state should look at more taxes since Alaska can't rely on oil revenue.
We need to start being adults and figuring out what do we want as a state government, then figuring out how we're going to pay for it instead of continuing to try and milk a cow right now is, I'm worried about getting way too skinny.
North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson says she's concerned that spending will squeeze out the dividend once the Constitutional Budget Reserve is spent.
I have seen nothing in the history since I have been here that shows that we will be able to stop spending money. And at this point, all I can use is the budget we currently have before us. And with this bill passed as is and no constitutional budget reserve, then there would not be any more than a couple hundred dollars left for the dividend.
Some bill opponents say the only way to protect dividends is to enshrine them in the state constitution. Even with the earnings draw, next year's budget will have a roughly $800 million gap. The legislature will likely turn to the CBR to close the gap, but it won't have that option for many more years. Governor Bill Walker says the bill is an important step. Walker generally takes time to review bills, but he said minutes after the House adopted it that he'll sign it.
You know, it's not something we take lightly. I mean, these are tough, tough decisions. There's no question about it. But, you know, they had to be made.
The bill is a major step toward the legislature finishing its work on the budget and ending the session. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Bristol Bay's Sacro herring fisheries are largely finished. In just under 2 weeks, seiners harvested their quotas in Togiak and Port Muller. The gillnet harvest remains open for the one gillnet boat fishing the quota in the Togiak district. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
The Togiak herring fishery closed to the purseine fleet on May 2nd. The quota for seiners was 16,800 tons, and they managed to take 16,500 tons. Warner Liu is the fleet manager for Icicle Seafoods. Liu also owns Deckhand Seafoods, which smokes, cans, and sells Togiak herring.
Well, the 2018 Togiak season was unusual in that it started way early, but it ran a full 11 days for the seine fishing. That was due mostly to the poor weather that never relented. It was windy, sloppy. Spotter pilots had a rough time flying. A lot of fish were caught with the sounders, not by the usual aerial spotting. It was tough fishing conditions.
The average roe recovery was reported at 11.4%. The overall size of the fish caught this year was 366 grams. Liu noted that these fish were smaller than normal.
The long-term average for a seine caught herring is 370 grams, and gill nets 400 or better. This year, the average was way smaller because of the high numbers of 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds. So the market seemed to be more forgiving this year, probably due to the shortfall in Sitka, and the roe percent was just fine.
In April, the Sitka Sacro herring fishery closed 8,000 tons short of its quota. It's too early to know what price the herring will fetch at market or the base price fishermen will be paid, but Liu is optimistic that the low harvest in Sitka could increase the demand for Togiak herring. Another unusual factor in this year's Togiak herring fishery was colder than average water temperatures, which may have contributed to the herring staying in deeper waters further from shore. Alaska Department of Fish and Game Area Management biologist Tim Sands said that water temperatures usually rise above 3 degrees Celsius during the fishery.
That's when the spawning starts happening and the season really gets going. This year, they're never got to 3 degrees, and the spawning didn't really happen like we normally see it. And I think that is part of the reason.
Despite the tough fishing conditions, Sands said the biomass was healthy. The Port Muller Sacro herring fishery opened briefly on Friday and Saturday. The 39-hour fishery harvested 1,000 tons of herring. Bob Murphy is an Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist on the Alaska Peninsula.
This is what we were shooting for based on the biomass that we observed. The fleet, they were happy with the quality and didn't want to stick through the storm that was occurring. Folks thought it would be best just to start moving on to get home.
With about 17,500 tons of herring between Togiak and Port Muller, seining for herring in Bristol Bay is over for 2018. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Opioids like heroin get the most attention when you hear about the drug epidemic in Alaska. But people working at the ground level are warning of a parallel problem that's getting worse. Methamphetamine is appearing in the state at greater volumes than ever before, and its negative health impacts are being exacerbated by the wave of potent opioids like prescription pain pills and heroin. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes wanted to know, why is meth surging in Alaska right now?
To get the answer, I visited a small one-story house on Main Street in Wasilla. Sitting in his desk, 30-year-old James Savage explains that the first time he used meth, it was to get off painkillers.
I was absolutely miserable in all facets of my life.
Savage was first prescribed pain meds after an injury when he was 19. He's a big guy, and he was given high doses of strong opioids. It started a spiral into addiction as he spent years circulating through pain management clinics. Eventually, his prescription was cut off. And in recent years, as stories of unintended opioid addiction have become more commonplace, this is when most people turn to heroin. But Savage, who hates needles, got advice from a drug buddy that he could detox by using methamphetamines.
So you have a lot of folks that are under the impression that their addiction is bad enough with heroin and they decide to go to methamphetamine to try and wean themselves off of the other.
Savage bypassed the debilitating pain of withdrawal through a days-long meth-induced mania, followed by 2 or 3 days of coma-like sleep. What followed was what he called 7 months of white-knuckle sobriety. Eventually, he relapsed. But instead of opioids, Savage started using meth all day, every day. In 2015, he entered a treatment program and has been in recovery for almost 3 years. Now, he works at Fiend to Clean, a recovery support nonprofit. Savage says that while opioids are getting a lot of attention, meth never left Alaska. And in fact, use of the two drugs together is increasing as users cope with the drowsy narcotic effects that can go along with high doses of opioids.
When you add an upper to a downer like heroin, you have increased duration, or someone who typically passes out or falls asleep after injecting heroin will be able to stay awake as a result of that other chemical in their system, and they'll feel the effects longer without falling asleep or having an adverse reaction to the amount of heroin they're using.
The health calamities associated with meth are rising in Alaska, in large part because it's more potent and because of how it's being used with other drugs. The rate of meth-related overdoses shot up more than 400% in less than a decade. Of the nearly 200 lethal overdoses caused by meth in that period, more than half also involved an opioid like heroin. This is prompting alarm among those closest to the drug problem. Ron Green has spent 3 decades in the treatment field and runs one of the state's only methadone clinics, located in downtown Anchorage.
We see as much methamphetamine use here as we see opiate use in this clinic.
Green forecasted the current heroin crisis as early as 2003, when he saw the drug of choice among people seeking treatment shift away from prescription pills to potent black tar heroin. Now, he says meth is out of control and estimates 60-70% of the people getting care at his clinic are either detoxifying from or still actively using meth. He says that's consistent with what similar clinics are seeing outside of Alaska, too.
From the people that are admitted onto all the other methadone clinics, we're seeing the exact same thing. Intravenous drug use, heroin, methamphetamine. We're seeing the same thing as our counterparts down in the lower 48.
Across the country, meth has never been cheaper or more pure than it is right now. Over a decade ago, most meth that reached Alaska was manufactured in small domestic operations inside houses, RVs, and apartments. But since federal legislation in 2006 limited access to many of the essential ingredients, production has moved abroad. According to the Drug Enforcement Administration, nearly all the meth arriving in the U.S. is now made in industrial labs by drug cartels in Mexico. Quality has gone up, even as prices have gone down. Lieutenant Jack Carson with the Anchorage Police Department says these days it's rare to see local mom-and-pop meth operations.
The cost of producing it or buying it that's coming up through Mexico, the price is significantly reduced than trying to get all the precursors here and then manufacture it. So we just don't see that often anymore. What we are seeing is meth coming in bulk from the source states down in the lower 48, coming into the mail system, and then getting distributed down.
For suppliers that can get drugs in, Alaska is an exceptionally lucrative market. Street prices in Anchorage are several times higher than in lower 48 cities, and when drugs move out to smaller bush communities or commercial fishing towns, the price goes up again. Law enforcement agencies say the size of the shipments they've intercepted has risen significantly the last few years, and federal officials don't anticipate the trend reversing anytime soon. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Zoe Sobel. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecast.